Welcome to the Signs of Safety Exchange podcast. I am Claudia Lynch, the Signs of Safety Implementation Lead for Toronto Children's Aid Society. In the series of podcasts, along with guest speakers, I explore anything and everything signs of safety to provide you, members of our organization, with a deeper understanding of signs of safety, our clinical framework, and how it is integrated into practice across the service areas. Let us grow and foster a culture of learning, critical thinking, and reflection towards deeper clinical practice and service excellence. Now, let's get into the episode. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome to part two of our series on the assessment map with my guest from Elia International. Again, we have interim CEO Kay White Bell, licensed trainer and consultant with Elia, as well as Ophelia Makwashi, also a licensed trainer and consultant with Elia. Thank you both again for joining me for this conversation. And just like the previous episode, we do have a lot to cover, so we'll just jump right in and continue. And so we mentioned, just touch on it briefly earlier when we had the conversation, Kay, you mentioned scaling questions. What makes the scaling question such an important aspect of the assessment map?
Okay, so I'm gonna defer to Ophelia to jump in on this, because I know the scaling question is her passion. So maybe if Ophelia starts here and then I can just pick up.
Yeah, I love the scaling questions, and just like Kay said, because the scaling question you can use that anytime. And we know that in the framework, that is the fourth domain, and that is the most important domain in the framework, because that is then where the mapping is organized around. So the safety scaling on 0 to 10, leave the family, or 0, no, the child cannot stay at home. So where do we put ourselves? How worried are we? So the scaling question is, it's defined, the number that you rate yourself, it doesn't have a meaning unless you define what the number stands for. It is what the number stands for that is most important when you're scaling. So let's say that I'm working with Kay in a case, and we scale differently on this scale, on the same scale. So the meaning of the number is actually what tells us where we are in terms of the worries or in the safety, depends on what we are scaling. And we also know that in signs of safety, how the question is phrased, the only thing we are scaling is the safety, always the safety, no matter how we phrase the question. The safety is what we are scaling. And the question, the scaling questions can vary depending on the situation, I will say. And like, when you're working with small children, let's say like 4 or 5 years old children, and you want to use the scaling question, I normally don't use 0 to 10 because it's too wide. So I would rather use 0 to 5.
Right.
And so it depends on the situation. Yeah. Kay, do you want to jump
in? Yeah. Okay. That's so interesting because, you know, like you, I'm kind of so steeped in signs of safety, but, you know, for me, I will still use the zero to 10. I think maybe like when I'm working with a young person or like a child, like 0 to 10, this seemed like really kind of like big scale. So yeah, like 0 to 5 is a good thing. And maybe using sometimes not even the numbers, you know, sometimes we can use like emojis, like yes. smiley face
yeah.
at the one end of the scale and a down, you know, frown at the other end of the scale, because then it's about how we're engaging. If we're talking with a youth or a young person, a child, where are they on this particular scale, then seeing something like that, then is much more, we're kind of like engaging with them in a greater way as well. The other thing that I want to say around the scaling is that with the roots of science of safety, we talk very much about it being strength-based, but it's also solution-focused as well. And if anyone who's interested in solution-focused techniques, then you will know almost immediately that the scaling questions are integral to solution-focused practice. And so the other thing, and I'm sure Claudia might ask, so, okay, so how do you set up your scaling question? So I'm going to jump in before she gets there. and just say, hey, so we always have the 10 as the best, you know, that's the best in terms of the situation. May not be completely resolved as yet, but it's the best. And zero is maybe things haven't moved at all from the situation where we find ourselves today. So again, it's like the solution focus is the 10 and the zero is, okay, things haven't moved. But when we ask the question, we always start with the higher number. Yeah. So we say, like, on a scale of, say, I'm going to say a scale of 0 to 10, I don't say where 0 is. I don't start with where 0 is. I'm going to say where 10 is, and then I'm going to go back to the 0. So I'm always looking towards it being an explanation of the strengths, but also of solution focus. So I'm taking it that way as opposed to starting with the negativity.
Yeah. And there comes the middle column again.
Yeah. Right.
That is the middle. You start with something positive because the person you have in front of you, the parent, knows already why we're here, why there is an open case. So when you start with the scaling question, you start with the good ones and then go to zero.
So and then to be so concrete about it is it would be something like, so what is happening that brings you all the way up to this number?
Exactly.
That's where you're teasing out more of the what's working well.
Absolutely.
And also one thing is that even though we're scaling 0 to 10, we don't need to reach 10. We don't need it before we close the case. We might be good enough, might be 8 or 7 or 6 even before we close the case. And this is where I think why I love so much about the United States Convention on the Right of the Child, what is good enough for this child based on the context that the child is living in, what is good enough? So good enough might be 5 or 6 for one child, whereby another child, based on the context, 9 or 8 might be good enough. So you
What I hear you say, though, Ophelia, is that the reason, so it's not just a 5. I wouldn't want to read a case to see I scale it a 5. I want, what is the context for that number?
Exactly.
And describe it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And also, okay, one thing you said before, using emoji, I use also, like, when depending on the child, if the child loves, cars, playing with cars, maybe 5 will be Tesla, and then 0 might be Volkswagen. Not saying that Volkswagen is a bad brand. So so the child plays all different models, and then all different cars and models, and ask the child to place the now to play itself.
Yes.
So just be creative with the scaling and with the scaling questions.
Yes.
And because the scaling questions is, because I think I always use that when I am out of questions. When I'm out of questions, when I can't come up with any question, then I will just throw in a scaling question. And that will always take you somewhere.
Absolutely.
It will always.
When you're stuck, a good scaling question. But I've also heard people say when they find that the questions they're asking may not be landing, or the person may not be as engaged with the question that they're asking, going to a scaling question tends to offer the person the opportunity to weigh in more and to give more context.
Exactly. And the thing is, I mean, when you are asking those questions, like the scaling question, don't have the answers when you're asking the scaling question. If you have the answers, please don't ask the question, because then you will not be curious enough to ask the follow-up questions, because it is about asking the details questions. And when you get the answer from the person, use the keyword in that answer and build on a new question. Keyword, new question. Keyword, new question. Because if you have the answer back in your mind before asking the question, please, then we know it. So we know. So
I think that's absolutely beautiful. What you just said there, I feel around the keyword, and hopefully, Claudia, your listeners will start to see, you know, the thread through of the whole of the signs of safety approach. So it's not just about, you know, the assessment map, but it's about how we ask our questions, about who it's about who we are. We always talk about signs of safety being more less of a thing, but more of who you are. So when you said the thing about the key question, thinking about the key question or response from the scaling question and then asking the other one, that also links to appreciative inquiry as well, because that's the kind of thing that we use. So we're listening for the response and then we're picking up the key keywords from that response that helps us to build on the next question. So hopefully, Claudia, for your listeners, they're starting to see that it's much more than the you know, the framework itself. It's a whole way of practicing. It's a whole way of how you use your skills and develop your skills. So you're asking curious questions, but you're also using your skills of listening at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the keywords. And just to build on your keyword idea, is those keywords, use them to develop your analysis statement as well.
Because
that's where people will see themselves in the information that you've gathered and how you've analyzed it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wonderful. So this is the part of the segment of the podcast where we answer questions from our audience. And we have a few questions that we're going to try to answer together. We have one question that comes to us from Toronto Branch, and they're asking the question. They said, I have the hardest time formulating good safety goals or well-being goals. What is your best advice and tips that I can use in formulating a safety goal or a well-being goal or success goal for a youth or child? What are your thoughts?
Shall I go?
Yeah, you can go first. Yeah.
I will say there is nothing that is called good safety goals or good well-being goals. Why I'm saying that is, what is the reason this child or this teenager is in the system? Why is it an open case? If it is because of danger or neglect, so what does neglect mean for this child? What does it mean? So you use those actual detailed, very simple words in your safety goals. So for like the example I took in the first episode about mental illness, parent having mental issues, if it's not having food in the fridge, no one to read bed stories, no one to help the child taking bath, the child outside by himself late in the evening, these are the goals. No matter how the parents are feeling, the child needs pam, 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 pam. That is your goal for that child. So it's not services that mom or dad or grandma or grandfather to take on some services. It's not services that is the goal. It's the how does the situation look like for the child once the services are no longer there.
Right.
So. Absolutely. And it is, it really is, as you said, Ophelia, each safety goal or well-being goal is going to look different for each individual scenario, each individual family, child or youth. And the important thing that I would also want to underline is what is it we need to see as professionals? Yeah. What is it we need to see that makes us no longer worried? And, you know, you were saying earlier in the previous podcast about, you know, what do families want? What do we want? Families don't want us to be in their lives any more than is necessary. And we really don't want to be in their lives either. No. So what is it we need to see as professionals so that we can get out of their lives and they can get on with theirs and we know that the child is safe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even to your example there, Ophelia, mental health struggles takes time.
Yes.
And folks who experience this may have ups and downs. And I like that you said it's not service. So it's not that this parent or caregiver will go to mental health treatment that is in your safety goal. It is what life will look like for this child to tell everyone that we're no longer worried about this,
even
when the issue still exists.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Great.
Totally.
Thank you for that answer. Question two comes to us again from Toronto Branch. Person says, when I'm asking questions to understand complicating factors, what exactly should I be seeking to understand here?
Oh, that's the interesting one. Do you want to go first, Kay?
Okay. All right. I can go first. All right, then. So I guess the complicating factors is about, you know, what we want to do is to honor the person in front of us. And who is the person that is standing in front of us? It leads to much more a broader kind of exploration and curiosity of, you know, who are they? What is their history? What is their story? But then thinking about what, you know, as professionals, what we might call a complicating factor for that person may not be seen as a complicating factor. So I want to really explore then. So what makes you? What makes you who you are? And again, I've got the worries are right there in terms of my questioning, thinking about, so you may have, let's use the example of having a mental health issue, for example. Mental health issue is only complicating if it impacts on the child's well-being.
Yeah.
So for the adult who may have a mental health issue, if they are taking their medication or if they're going for their counselling sessions and so on, and they are able to take care of their child's getting to school, got food on the table, you know, good clothes to wear and so on, then it's not a complicating factor. But it becomes complicating if the adult is not taking their medication or they're not going for counselling sessions, and the impact of them not doing what they are supposed to do to keep the child safe then becomes complicating. So it gets something that gets in the way of the child being kept safe, or gets in the way of the adult being able to formulate and keep to a safety plan. So that's kind of like where I'd start off with that. What do you say, Olivia?
Yeah, I totally agree. And also, like you said, what might be our what we will see as a complicated factors might necessarily not be a complicated factor for the parents, for the families.
Yes.
Then the question, then there comes my follow-up questions. Do you have any idea why I think that this might be a complicated factors for the child? So they ask me, so I let them ask me that question and then explore my own thinking and also probably my own biases. My own biases comes in there. And to be honest with you, Claudia, I will say this. There are some factors that before I visited your organization back in May, June this year, there were a couple of things that I've considered as complicated factors. And after being in with you and your colleagues, I'm like, but that is not necessary complicated factors. That is part of their identity. Mm-hmm. That is part of who they are. So what gives me the authority or the right to see that as a complicated factors? So there comes my own biases.
Yes.
My own prejudice and my own biases, which I need to be aware of. When I'm aware of those biases, then they will not have a negative impact on the assessment that I'll be doing.
Yeah.
And I've also heard that, you know, complicating factors for me, I think one of my go-to questions when I'm exploring complicating factor is questions like, what is happening for you that is making it harder to deal with a problem or to achieve safety. So it's not necessarily something that is a protection issue in and of itself, but what might be happening in and around your family or the child's life that is making it more difficult to deal with the situation.
Yeah. Yes.
Wonderful. Third and final question before we wrap up today. Someone asked, I often get stuck when asking questions around next steps. What advice can you share that can strengthen my skill in this one? And I think for me, when I saw that question, I naturally think of a scaling question, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, go for it, Ophelia.
Yeah, that is what I thought also. I was thinking when I saw that, when you read that questions, is a scaling question will be very useful here. Depending if it's the intake team or the investigation team, you ask yourself quite a few scaling questions. Let's say for the intake team, it's about on a scale 0 to 10, when 10 is the probability that this worry will happen or reoccur within the next 24 hours or 48 hours or 72 hours, and 0 is no, there is no chance that this will happen again within the coming hour to 24. So I mean, where do I scale myself? And what is the reason? What is in that number? Pam, 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 and then you dot it down. And then you will, and then asking the follow-up questions. So where on the scale would I want to be to feel okay? Yeah. So who will give me that information? Where do I get the information? When do I need that information? So it is about, you, like you said, scaling question to help you to kind of like see the mapping process in front of you.
Yeah.
So I will go with the scaling questions, just like you said.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure there's much more that I can add to that, because the scaling question is the go-to when you start to thinking about next steps. You could probably also, in a service area, you could probably also use scaling questions in a kind of contextual sense. Say, for example, if the worker is having a conversation with their supervisor, if there's a contextual scaling question, so, you know, thinking about the kinds of scenarios that generally come through our door on a scale of 0 to 10, where 10 is this is a situation that is a routine, something that we see all of the time. This is not a big issue in the context of the kinds of case that we get through. And 0 is, well, actually, in terms of the context of the case that we get through, we get to see this is a worry, and we actually need to think about what we need to do to keep this child safe. So you can do it as a service kind of scale, as opposed to a specific type of scale as well.
And I think the piece that I would add as well, even if I don't ask a scaling question, I can ask future questions. Something sometimes referred to as miracle questions.
Absolutely.
To get some next steps.
Absolutely.
What a wonderful conversation we've had over the last two episodes. Kay and Ophelia, we've come to the end of this podcast, and I really want to thank you for coming to share your wisdom and insight on the signs of safety and mapping process. I think together we've covered some key messages as it relates to the 7 analysis categories of the assessment map, and I'm sure our service teams, both workers and supervisors, will find value in everything that you've shared over these past two episodes. And thank you so much again for joining me.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having us, Claudia.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to this episode of the Signs of Safety Exchange podcast. As we wrap up, I would like to remind you to send your signs of safety questions to the S of S podcast at torontocas.ca, and we will answer your questions on the next episode. This week, as you approach your work, we are inviting you to consider the lessons learned in this episode and think about how you can work with intention to purposefully apply them in your daily practice of signs of safety. Please join us again next time for the next episode. See you next time.